This is the Frogcast.
Here today to talk about TCU's big 52-45 win over Kansas State up in Manhattan and one of the most exciting finishes, which is difficult to say in this 2015 season. We are going to talk about everything that went right and wrong up there in our game. We are going to look around the rest of the Big 12 as well as the nation and some of the changes that are already happening on coaching staffs across the country. That and a whole lot more on this week's edition of the Frogcast. Well, Trey and Daniel, we are excited to be talking with you tonight because we have so much to dig into for the Horned Frogs' big win and big second-half comeback over Kansas State. Trey, we're going to dig deep, but just tell me off the top of your head, did it feel good to beat Kansas State?
It was, yeah. I mean, obviously, it's always great to get the win. I came into this week feeling pretty confident about the Frogs' chances. I didn't see it, you know, obviously turning out to be this close, but yeah, very, you know, exciting game. It seems like each week the games get a little bit more dramatic with this team, but yeah, I mean, it was a gritty win. You know, there was that, don't get me wrong, there was times that I got a little bit worried there, but I always felt like TCU was gonna get back in it just because of the offense. But yeah, I did get worried, but Boykin took the game over and, you know, he did some special things and it was a great game.
It was a great game. And we saw a lot of special things from the Frogs on Saturday night. Daniel, just off the top of your head, how did it feel to see the Frogs get this big victory in Manhattan?
That was about as big a relief as kicking the game-winning field goal in West Virginia last year. Not quite as big as it didn't come down to the second. That was nerve-wracking, you know. Going into halftime, I thought, I don't think we can pull this off. Snyder's figured this out. He's done it again. But, you know, Boykin just put the team and the whole game on him. And by sheer tyranny of will, made us defeat them. And then that final sack with the fumble and... oh, I've never felt so relieved in my life.
Yeah, relief and excitement all in one breath is how most of us that are fans of the Frogs felt by the time that game was over. Well, like much of this season, in terms of tight moments, this game came down to two heroes for the Horned Frogs that I don't want to presuppose this stuff, but these guys are already legends in the lore of over 100 years of Horned Frog football. Trevon Boykin, Josh Doctson. These two guys put the team on their back and willed us to the win. Whether that was Boykin taking it on the redraw around the end for a huge touchdown, whether that was Doctson with yet another multiple touchdown game, a big game showing that he is a man among boys. Those are the two guys that stand out above everything else that went right in the second half in this game. So we're just going to take a second and dig into these two living legends among the Horned Frogs. Trey, what did you see out of Doctson that inspired you to believe that he's the best college football receiver?
I mean, he did what he does, and that is make big plays and catch touchdown passes. I mean, this is his fourth straight game with at least 100 yards receiving, and also his fourth straight game with at least two receiving touchdowns. He's so reliable. He comes up big when you need him most. He makes the craziest catches look routine because he makes them look so easy. It's nuts, the one-handers, the jumping, the acrobatic catches that he pulls in. Like, just this season alone would be good enough for a lot of players' whole careers, lifetime span for a highlight reel. Like, he does it every week, and it just blows my mind every week. He's number two in the nation in receiving yards with 877 for the year. He's also number two in receiving touchdowns with 10. He's three behind Corey Coleman of Baylor. So he's right in the mix there. I personally obviously think he's the best receiver in the country. Has, you know, 50 catches. I don't think you can say enough positive things about the guy. And I mean, I'm just glad that, you know, I'm not a defensive coordinator or a cornerback or something that has to figure out how to stop the guy, because I don't know how you do it. I mean, with his size and his, you know, jumping ability and his hands, like, I don't know how you cover that kid.
Well, I think we've seen that you just don't. You hope to shut him down. He goes into double coverage. He goes over the middle and takes a hit. And then when it's just time to run a corner fade, he just knows exactly what to do, how to use his body, how to use his hands. And when he high points the ball, it is a thing of beauty. It is also a reminder that, you know, there is, I know it's a phrase that gets thrown around, the kid has the frog factor because he is a walk-on. I mean, this young man, Adam Mansfield, had an offer to Wyoming, went out and actually caught a pass against the Frogs in 2011 in our last year in the Mountain West, transferred back because he wanted to play for TCU. His mom works at TCU. This kid was a bleacher creature, and he walked on the program, and now he is going to be a first- or second-round draft pick. He is going to win the Biletnikoff, possibly, first- or second-team All-American, the best wide receiver in college football that went from a walk-on to the top of the top. This is a classic college football story. It's one of the reasons that you just have to love this guy. Well, there is no Josh Doctson without the quarterback throwing the ball, and that's Trevon Boykin. Daniel, I know that I get sick of listening to every time somebody on TV talks about Boykin that he's a, quote, former running back or former wide receiver. No, Patterson recruited him to play quarterback, and he is able to do now what Patterson thought he could do the whole time in this system that Meacham and Cumbie created for him. Tell us what you loved about Trevon Boykin in the game Saturday night against Kansas State in the way that he drug us to victory.
Pretty much all of it. He just does what he's does. He's, you know, he's accurate. He's got, you know, those long pass to Doctson. I just love looking at that. You know, I don't even remember how long it was, but it was just beautiful. And making plays when there's really nothing left to do, and he's scrambling around. He makes the one at Kansas State for 69 yards for a touchdown. He does what he does. He's just, you know, showing us more. Yesterday he showed us more of why he deserves the Heisman. You know, if we have these big blowout games where he's just making nice passes, and then you know, the other string quarterbacks come in the late third quarter, you don't get to see all that good stuff. But it's when it comes down to it, comes down to the wire, where he has to take control and make a play happen. That's what he does best, and he showed us again last night, and that's, to me, definitely deserving of a Heisman.
Well, speaking of the Heisman, Troy, you had punched up some numbers comparing Boykin to some of the former quarterbacks that had won the Heisman Trophy in the last few years. Why don't you take a second to walk us through that and why you think, not only on paper, but just what happens on the field, you think Boykin needs to be considered as a front runner for the Heisman?
Yeah, so I was just kind of curious this morning, and I went through and looked, and I took a look at Robert Griffin and Johnny Manziel in their Heisman seasons and compared them to Boykin. At this point, I looked, obviously TCU's played six games, so I looked at RG3 and Manziel's first six games of their Heisman years, just strictly passing yards and touchdowns. I need to go back and look at interceptions and like rushing statistics, but just strictly passing. At this point, RG3 had thrown for 1,950 yards and 22 touchdowns. Manziel had thrown for 1,680 yards and 14 touchdowns. And right now, Boykin is at 2,103 yards and 21 touchdowns. So, by far leading that way in passing yards, with, like, you know, look, around 150 more than RG3 and, you know, way more than Manziel, and just one behind in touchdowns, one behind RG3. So, I mean, if you're just looking strictly at the numbers, he's right there with both of them in their, you know, great season. So, you know, to me, it's, he's in, he you know, is in this has to be in the conversation, especially if, you know, if he continues to play this way going forward. And like I said, this doesn't even mention his rushing yards and touchdowns, which is a whole nother story, because I have a feeling he'd definitely be above Manziel and RG3 in those two. So he's having a great year. You know, deserves all the praise, all the hype. You know, he had those Heisman moments against Kansas State. That, I mean, you know, like I mentioned, that 69-yard run was freaking awesome. And, I mean, I even thought the one on when it was 3rd and 3 and he scrambled for that 14-yard touchdown around the edge, I thought, I mean, that one was clutch as hell also. I mean, the dude just – he deserves the praise and – I cannot, I mean, it scares me, you know, this kind of final stretch of the season after the bye week coming up after Iowa State, but it really excites me too to see what he does against some of the better teams in the conference.
Yeah, I have contended that if Boykin wins the Heisman, it's because he has a good game and we beat Oklahoma and Baylor on back-to-back weeks. I mean, he can have better numbers than Winston, than Manziel, than RG3, all of those guys, he can have better numbers. But if we don't take care of business against Oklahoma and Baylor on national television on the last 2 weeks, then he's not going to win the Heisman. But if he does that, he's going to be in a position where we are either, you know, undefeated or one loss, knocking on the door of the playoff the last weekend. And Leonard Fournette and LSU are not going to be undefeated come Thanksgiving weekend. And I think that's where he's going to be able to create some separation. I don't know the politics of the Heisman voting ballot, but the best quarterback on the best team tends to win that, and he's going to put himself in a position to be able to do that. At least that's my hope. But I couldn't agree more that he is in a great spot moving forward to be able to contend for the Heisman. Well, we're going to break down some stuff in terms of midseason grades here in just a second, guys. But was there anything else that you've got burning inside of you that you wanted to share from what we saw in the Kansas State game with the win that we had?
Well, I just there was two things kind of I wanted to mention. One, just the penalties. I feel like they're a killer. We had 11 for 81 against Kansas State. If you go back and look at Texas Tech, TCU had 10 for 110. And then they had 9 penalties for 115 yards against SMU. And I feel like that's kind of one of the biggest kind of killers for the defense. I mean, I feel like a lot of them have come on like pass interference, or we saw like against Tech, those stupid like roughing the passer, you know, type penalties, unnecessary roughness. So hopefully they can get those solved going forward. But, you know, a lot of people talked about the defense in this game, and I agree with y'all. In the first half, they looked outmanned. They looked undersized. They got exposed. But in the second half, I mean, they turned it around, and I thought they looked good. They only allowed 10 points. You know, Kindred had the pick six. You know, they got the sack and the fumble at the end, you know, to seal the game. It just seems like, you know, yes, they're inexperienced, and yes, they're going to have problems, but they come up with stops when they absolutely have to. And no, it's, I'm not, you know, loving the play, but I mean, I have a hard time criticizing them after they, you know, after getting beat down so bad in the first half. They did turn it around in the second half. You know, obviously they played really well against Texas. So I don't know. Yeah, the defense did play bad, but I also think the defense played pretty good. And so it's hard for me to kind of jump all over them. But I also get the criticism. So, I mean, I go back and forth. But the second half, you got to give them credit for that.
Yeah, it's hard to argue with what they did the second half. And that's a weird offense. That is a weird offense. When they have that pop pass with the fullback and the tight end. And, I mean, I guess in Manhattan you can go 5 yards across the line of scrimmage and still throw a forward pass.
No.
And so it is a weird offense to stop. There's just no other way to say it. And they might not be five-star athletes, but they are coached with five-star capacity. I mean, they are the best coached team. And so to see what we did in the second half against them, I don't have a lot of complaints about what happened in the second half. If we got half of what we did in the first half that we got in the second half, we would have won this game by 3 touchdowns, maybe four touchdowns. But that's just kind of what it was. Well, aside from the pop pass that clearly ticked you off, Daniel, anything else you saw in that game that you wanted to highlight before we move on?
I thought the defense, after watching them, you know, take care of Texas so easily, I really thought they might have turned over a leaf or whatever. and they were flying around. It was just amazing. But it might have been the atmosphere being at Eamon Carter, and then they get out there, and I don't know, because Patterson said, I'm sure a lot of people heard, he said that they weren't focused and they weren't taking it as seriously as they should throughout the week leading up to the game, and then that can happen. But I think once Aaron Green gets that touchdown right off the bat, I think that really just kind of knocked him over the edge to thinking, oh, we got this, it's in the bag. And then they got shoved around. So I was really surprised at it. But at the same time, I was like Trey, I don't remember if he was surprised, but I was impressed that they were able to turn it around in the second half. Anytime we have a bad first half, I'm always like, okay, we got Gary Patterson in there. I know what's going to come back out on the field is going to be a lot better. They're going to be motivated as far as him chewing them out, and then they'll make the right adjustments, and it always happens. And I didn't know if we'd be able to pull it off because we'd gotten down so bad and getting pushed around so hard because they were just bigger than a lot of our guys. But they were able to pull it off, and like Trey said, they looked pretty stinking good. To hold them to 10 points after what felt just like a total beating in the first half, it's actually pretty impressive.
Yeah, when Kendrick picked off that pass and took it all the way to the house just by sheer will. He's not the fastest kid in our defensive backfield. And we closed it down to 11 right away on that drive. I thought, all right, the game is on. This is not going to be a blowout. We're not going to throw the remote across the room and smash it. We're going to be in this game until the end. And it took every second until the last second in order for us to win that game. So,
what did y'all think on the 4th and 1 in the fourth quarter when Snyder decided to kick the field goal? Because I personally, I think y'all might agree, I probably would have gone for it. I know that they did kind of, I guess the smart move or what a lot of coaches would do is tie the game up. But I thought they'd been getting, 1 yard pretty much any time they wanted it all game long. And they could have sealed the game there. Cause they gave the ball back to TC with like a minute 40 left, which was way too much time. So I don't know. I thought that was a really questionable call there at that point.
I wasn't sure why he did that. Cause anytime they needed, like you're saying, a yard, they would line up and, it looked like they were our guys were trying to push into some giant caterpillar moving dirt or something. They just plowed. It was slow, but just it didn't stop. And it just looked, I was like, this is unstoppable. They're going to do this every single time. We're screwed. And then he goes to kick it, and I was like, what? I was happy, but that was weird. I don't know if he's – I know he's really a conservative play caller, but – you would think that, if they only needed one, they usually got three. They were pushing so hard.
Yeah, I thought that was a bad call. There's just no other way to put it. Because once they kicked that and we had, over a minute and a half left, I'm like, we're going to win this game. There's just no doubt in my mind. I didn't know that Boykin was going to hit Doxson so fast and he was going to take off to the end zone and strut in the last 5 yards. But I thought that was a bad call. There's just no other way to say it. Looking back, I have a feeling he wishes he would have gone for it. Because like Daniel said, every time they wanted a few yards, they just lined up in what looked like the victory formation and then had everybody pushing on the quarterback until he got the first down. So, well, a couple of things that the SID Mark Cohen tweeted out that I just wanted to highlight to wrap this up. TCU is the only team in the country with 3 Power 5 road wins. And that is something to be darn proud of. I know that some of this will kind of even out, of course, as the season moves on. But when the selection committee looks at this, we are 6-0, and half of those wins are on the road against Power 5 teams, who will probably all of whom make a bowl. So that's something to be proud of. He also said that we are helping other teams set their attendance record. When we played at Minnesota, it was the largest home crowd they'd ever had. When we played at Tech, it was the second largest home crowd they'd ever had, second only to the Colt McCoy, Michael Crabtree game out in 2008. And this was the third largest home crowd ever for Kansas State. And considering that over Snyder's time, they've bounced around the top 5 a couple of seasons, that they were really in the national championship hunt late in the year. That is quite a statement for us. And we should be proud that we are driving up other people's ticket sales. So those are all good things I think the TCU needs to be proud of. Those are things that we can hang our hat on in terms of accomplishment that we've been able to do this far in the season. Well, now that we're halfway through the year, we want to take a minute and offer a summary and some grades really quick on the three things that we've seen in terms of offense, defense, and special teams. So just really quick around the circle here. Trey, let's start with offense. What's your grade for the season so far and why?
I think obviously this has to be probably the easiest category, but I have to give them a solid A. I was debating between an A+. I think, you know, if I give them an A+ now, that means they're nowhere to go, you know, from there. So I think there's still some upside to go for this offense. As crazy as that sounds, I think they could still get a little better. So I'm going to go solid A for offense.
Daniel?
I'm going to go with an A-. And I would say A+. But if you just kind of are looking over the numbers, it doesn't really tell the kind of, I mean, it could be better because we were giving a bunch of these young guys so much play. You know, Boykin doesn't have quite as many completions and things like that because the younger kids are dropping them and stuff like that. So it doesn't, on the surface, quite seem as polished as it could. I think if it was just nothing but starters, it would just be incredibly lights out. So A-, something around there.
I'm going to go with A- as well. And the only thing holding down to the A- is the Minnesota game. When I look back on that compared to the points that we're putting up now, it just showed that we kind of got out of the gate slow. And we can get out of the gate slow on the road, and that's just something we need to be mindful of going forward. Well, let's flip over to the other side of the ball that I guarantee is not going to get an A. Trey, tell us what your grade is for the defense midseason.
I'm going C for the defense. Obviously, they've had to deal with the injuries, which were unexpected, but just grading on the players that have played and what we've seen from them, I'm going to have to go C. You know, obviously, they haven't been great. They've given up a lot of points, a lot of yards. I mentioned earlier, though, that they still, you know, have managed to get stops when they need them most. So I'm going to go with a C, and hopefully they can maybe get that to a B- by the end of the year, maybe a B, hopefully, you know, improve a little bit, but I'm going to go C.
Daniel?
I went with the C+. After Texas, I probably would have gone with something more like a B-, leaning towards a B, but after that first half at Kansas State, I probably would have gone with some kind of a D, but seeing how they were able to turn it around, I thought, okay, there's still something there. So I went with a C+.
Yeah, it's hard to grade this one because the defense has literally changed every week because of who we've lost and who we've gotten back in the process. But I'm going to go with a C- because at some point this will catch up with us. We can't outscore everybody every week as fun as it is. And so I think in terms of our defensive backfield that either is going to get burned or get pass interference called on them way too much, as well as our linebackers who are playing their heart out, who are playing fast, but are still a little undersized and get caught in the wrong gap every now and then on some misdirection, I think it drags it down. The saving grace is our defensive line. I think our experience on that is going to elevate us to at least a C+, B-, hopefully by the Oklahoma State game. But I'm going to go with a C- right now because I just don't feel confident in what this team is doing on the defensive side of the ball. So hopefully they don't read my tweets and feel discouraged by that. But that's kind of where I'm at in terms of the defense. Well, let's flip over to the third side of the ball here and talk about special teams. Trey, what's your summary of where we are so far on special teams?
So if I had to base this just on our kickers, I would probably give us a C. Obercrombs missed 3 field goals this season. I mean, I'm being kind of nitpicky because he's been pretty solid, drained some, you know, really long field goals as well. But I've been kind of disappointed with Ethan Perry. His punting, he's averaging 39 yards a punt, which is the lowest of his career as a Horned Frog. But it's not just the kickers. You got to include the returners, too. And then when you factor in Turpin into all of that, he's one of my biggest highlights of this season. So I'm going with a B- for special teams. Just based on, I just don't think our kickers, mainly the punting. I've been disappointed with the punting this season. So I'm kind of being nitpicky on that one. That's where I'm at.
Daniel, you going to agree with that?
Yeah, pretty much. I'm going with just a straight up B. Turpin, he's done really well. He's had a couple where he's really taken off, and we know his potential, but he just hadn't had that moment where he's taken one to the house. So I'm looking forward to that. Over Chrome, yeah, fairly solid. There's a couple chip shots here and there that you just gives you like Ross Evans feelings, you know. And then like, but for the really long ones, he's solid, you know. He's like Dan Bailey. But yeah, the what really drags us down is Ethan Perry. I don't have the stat in front of me, but he's gotten statistically worse like each year as we go on, like shorter average, and then. And now he's shanking punts. Like, what was it at the Kansas State? Like 13 yards. So he really drags down the average. So I'm giving special teams a B.
Yeah, special teams is going to get a B minus from me. The kicking, you know, clearly Overcrome. Hopefully he's worked through some of those issues. But he's a great kicker, and he's been a great kicker for us this whole time. And the return game is solid. I'm looking forward to seeing Turpin take one back, as has been said. On the positive, I think he's fielded all the punts well. I mean, there's some questionable times of whether he should have, you know, fair catched it or, you know, fair caught it or not, or let it go over its head. But what we don't have is three botched punts, Sky Dawson style. And so for a true freshman to go out there and really us not be worried about that, that's got to be an advantage. But, man, the punting game is going to hurt us. We have got to get Ethan Perry to have his head locked in. To not be shanking that punt 14 yards down the field going out of bounds. We need him to be better. I mean, it makes you miss the old Anson Kelton days when we sent the 370-pound punter back there to just plant it inside of the five. So hopefully we can turn the corner on that. We are going to do one more thing to look at midseason here, and that's maybe some surprise players. Is there any player or a coach or a shift in what's our identity that has caught your attention so far this year, Trey, that's a surprise to you?
This might not be a surprise to a lot of people, but I had high hopes for Aaron Green going into this season, but I did not think that he was going to be performing like this. I think he's kind of – he gets credit, but he's also sliding under the radar a little bit just because of how great Boykin and Dotson have been. But when you look at – you know, Green stats, he's put up 625 yards on the ground, averaging 6.4 yards per carry, and has 8 touchdowns, which, you know, I mean, Dotson has 10, so he's, you know, only 2 behind Dotson. So that's kind of, I guess, the biggest surprise for me is just how great Aaron Green has been.
Well, the guy that surprised me, I don't know, I'm going to sound like a broken record, is Turpin. I mean, we all expected good things out of him, but I think with the injuries on the offensive side of the ball, especially at the receiving core, he's doing more than we thought he was going to. You know, breaking a Big 12 freshman record for touchdowns in one game, that didn't happen on accident. And we knew he was going to be good, but he is clearly a special player, and I think we should be glad that we got him in Fort Worth. Well, now that we've looked back all the way through the Kansas game and what we did right and what we did wrong and some things that have surprised us so far midseason, we want to take a second to remind everybody where you can find everything you've ever wanted to know about the Frogcast. We hope that you subscribe to us on iTunes. We hope that you'll find us on Stitcher Radio if you have that app on Android. You can also follow us on Twitter and on Facebook, where every time we post a new show that you can find it there, and we'll post it for a couple days straight in order for you to be able to listen to this great episode and be able to keep up with everything that's going on here. We also want to thank the guys that run Killer Frogs for letting us come on there and share the information about our site. Go on there. If you're not a member, go post. Go read all the fun stuff that's on there. And go check out the new shop that they're developing as we speak, where you're able to get some good jerseys and shirts and all the things that you need to let everybody know that you love the Horned Frogs. Well, Trey, I know that you consume college football at a great rate, so I want you to walk us through what have you seen nationally in this last weekend? What are some things that caught your eye in terms of games, things going on in the Big 12, and big picture stuff for college football?
Well, I think the biggest kind of shocker for me over the weekend was, you know, Texas and Oklahoma. You know, obviously Texas coming off the 50-7 loss to the Horned Frogs. I personally thought Oklahoma would come out and not dominate them like TCU did, but at least get the win. But Texas, you know, showed some heart, and I was surprised they came out, you know, so strong and got the 24-17 win. One thing that kind of, I guess, I thought was weird or whatever is, you know, Final seconds tick off the clock. Texas wins, and the Texas players give Charlie Strong the Gatorade bath, lift him up, you know, do the kind of crowd surfing thing where they have him, you know, all, you know, players lifting him up, you know, and they're going crazy. And I get that it's a rivalry game, but I just thought it was kind of weird that they celebrated like they won the Super Bowl. So that was probably the biggest thing. And then, you know, elsewhere in the Big 12, just worth mentioning, you know, Baylor blew out Kansas 66-7, which most people expected. But Oklahoma State still undefeated. They're sitting at 6-0. They beat West Virginia 33-26 in overtime. So, you know, that game going to Stillwater, you know, that's looming big. Along, you know, obviously have to go to Norman as well. But Oklahoma State, you know, showing up strong. So they're, you know, definitely a team that worries me. And then Utah, our old Mountain West Conference friends, got the win over California 30-24. Jared Goff, the Cal quarterback, who a lot of people had in the you know, Heisman race, he threw five picks in that game, two touchdowns. So I don't know. I think he's kind of out of the picture. Honestly, I think it's kind of a two-man race at this point. Alabama with you know, a decent win over Arkansas, 27-14. And then I think, you know, something else that surprised me, Michigan with a 38-0 shutout against Northwestern. Northwestern, you know, was ranked in the top 15. And, you know, I wasn't sold on Harbaugh going there, at least not turn it around this quickly. I've been pretty shocked by what they've done since their opening loss to Utah.
Yeah, it's hard to argue with what Michigan's got going on right now. I'm going to highlight them here in just a second when we get to our top five. But yeah, I wrote this down back in July just so I could show it to everybody. I picked them back in July to beat Ohio State in the Big House at the end of the season. And I didn't think they were going to be this good this fast. I thought they'd be good by the end of the season, but they have clearly exceeded expectations. So yeah, around the Big 12, it's interesting to see Oklahoma State is the last of the undefeated team with TCU and Baylor. And so I think that clearly that game up at Stillwater is going to be a big deal. But the other thing of note is it looks like we've already got some coaches that are getting fired across the country. And Steve Sarkisian, God bless him, and I don't say that sarcastically, clearly has an alcohol issue and has been put on permanent leave from USC. They got hammered. I mean, they got beat at home by Washington, and it looks like nobody in the Pac-12 outside of Utah is really in the playoff race right now.
Hammered was probably the wrong word there.
That was bad. And I corrected myself because I didn't even get hammered. They just got beat, but yeah, that was probably the wrong word there. Thank you very much for correcting me that, and don't edit that out. So
don't worry.
Yeah, he's clearly got some issues. USC has some issues, but that was the wrong hire, and Pat Hayden's going to have to deal with that if he even still has his job as the AD, who's a member of the playoff selection committee out there at USC. And Randy Etzel was let go of Maryland, and that is a job that has got Under Armour money the way that Oregon has Nike money. They want to make themselves the Oregon of the East. So that's going to be interesting to see who they go after as well. And DFW focused. I don't know if anybody else. Everybody got a friend that went to UNT and dropped out. But Dan McCartney got fired at UNT for getting beat. I believe it was 66-0 against Portland State.
Yeah, oh, it's bad.
Am I the only one that's old enough to remember when they were actually pretty good? I mean, like, they were pretty good.
I don't either.
I do. I remember going – it's only because of when it happened. I remember going up there the week before 9/11 and watching TCU. I think it was 2000. Yeah, it was 2001. Going up there and watching them play. We want to beat them like 21-3 or 21-10. And they had some decent teams before they fired – they got to some bowl games. Then they fired their coach and they hired Todd Dodge, and it just went straight into the tank from there. So Dan McCartney, former Big 12 coach at Iowa State, he's gone. So – well, guys, we want to take a minute here and look at our top five of who we have as our top five right now. And the playoff selection committee hasn't returned my call and wanting our input, but we're going to keep sending it to them. So, Trey, who do you have right now in your top five if you were in charge of picking the playoff?
Yeah, right now I'm rolling with Utah, TCU, Baylor, Clemson, and Texas A&M. That's my top five. And looming right outside of there is a new team that I'm more and more impressed with each week. I'm going to have to go with Florida is my sixth team. I think they've been showing, you know, a lot of improvement there. So that's who I'm kind of high on right now. I'm just not sold on Ohio State. I don't know if it's because they don't feel like, I don't know, their competition. I don't know what's going on with Ohio State, but I can't remember the stat, but they've been behind in like three of their games at halftime this year or something like that. I don't know. I don't think
they suck. Yeah,
I'm not on their bandwagon by any means.
Yeah, they're this year's Florida State, and I just hope that they get beat. I hope it catches up with them. Daniel, who do you have in your top five nationally?
I still got Utah at the top, and I hate to do this, but I'm going to put Baylor at second.
Boo this man!
And then TCU third. And then Clemson, and then A&M. And I hate to put Baylor in front of us. It really stings, but just looking at it in a rational and objective way, right now, so far, I think they're better.
Well, it's been nice having you on the show, Daniel. I've really enjoyed this time. You know, I know you do a good job producing and all that, but it's been great knowing you. So, no, I've got Utah number one. I got TCU number two. I'm going with Florida number three. I feel comfortable putting it in front of Baylor because I got Baylor number four, and their, you know, Power Five road win against Kansas just doesn't motivate me. I know they're good. I know that they would have beat us if we'd have played the second week of the season, but I just don't feel inspired by what Baylor's, you know, their resume up to this point has not accomplished a whole lot. And I got Clemson at number five, even though I think that they're going to lose somewhere down the road. I got them there. And then just kind of on the outside looking in, I got the Aggies at number six. They got a big game with Alabama this weekend. I'll be curious to see what happens with that because either Alabama's going to steamroll them or the Aggies are going to become even more unbearable. So I don't know if I can handle Aggies beating Alabama again. But Trey mentioned this, and I got Michigan on the outside looking in here. If there's one team that I could have bought that you put money on right now that's going to make the playoff that's not in the top 10, I would put that money on Michigan. I mean, they got lucky. They're in the Big Ten, so they don't have a tough schedule. But they do have Michigan State this weekend, who I think they're going to beat. And they have Ohio State at home, and I think they're going to beat them. If we all think that Ohio State is a fraud, I think Michigan's going to beat them. So I'll be curious in late November if Michigan's still in that position that they are. Anything else you guys want to weigh in on in terms of our rankings? And, you know, the Frogs did come in number three in both polls. Both polls followed Daniel and jumped Baylor in front of the Frogs.
I didn't like doing it. So, and it's only because of injuries and stuff. And shut up.
It's all right. I'm teasing you. Trey, what were you going to say, bud?
No, I mean, I see how the voters, I guess, can put Baylor at two. But, I mean, when I just look at the teams they've beat, you know, they've beaten, you know, they've had one, I guess, true road win, and that's against Kansas. And, you know, they haven't beaten a team with a winning record on the road yet. I mean, Tech was at a neutral site. Their combined opponent's record is 11-17 so far for the season. Plus, TCU has played a sixth game where Baylor's only played five, and TCU has the extra Power Five opponent in Minnesota over Baylor. So I just – it kind of – I mean, whatever, yeah, they've been blowing teams out, but it kind of bothers me that when you actually look at the schedules and break it down, I mean, TCU does have more quality wins with the Minnesota game and beating Texas and Kansas State. I just, you know, honestly, the rankings really don't bother me. None of them freaking matter. You know, even the playoff crap doesn't matter till the last one. So I watch it. I see where we're ranked, but it doesn't, I try not to let it bother me and whatever. It'll sort itself out.
Yeah. Some random Twitter follower that I have said that Baylor wins by 60 against a bottom feeder and goes from 4-2. TCU wins by 50 against a Big 12 bottom feeder, and they go from 3-6. And I got a kick out of that. I thought that was hilarious.
That's good.
That's good. It wasn't good when it happened, but yeah, that's really good. Well, I don't want to do what the team did this last week and look ahead, but we need to go ahead and look forward to Iowa State this weekend. There's just not a lot to say, but I know that you guys have dug up some numbers on Iowa State and what we're looking at. Trey, what do you think it's going to take for us to be able to beat a Paul Rhodes coach team up there in Ames?
Well, really the thing, you know, I haven't watched a lot of Iowa State football this year, but just looking at kind of the numbers, you know, we think the TCU defense is bad and, you know, not playing like we think they should. Well, if you look at the Iowa State defense, they are giving up more points per game. They're giving up more yards per game. They give up 430 yards a game and obviously giving up more passing yards per game than TCU. So statistically, their defense is worse than TCU's. And I think the Frogs offense is going to have a heyday. As long as they don't come out, you know, undisciplined and, you know, don't overlook Iowa State kind of like they did Kansas State. And, you know, I just think it's the thing for me is get a good win, you know, try to blow them out, get the backups in there, get to the bye week healthy, get some rest and get prepared for the, you know, second half of the season. 'Cause it's going to be a monster. So that's really what I'm just concerned about. Stay healthy, win, and let's go.
Daniel, what's your take on us traveling to Ames and taking on Iowa State?
I feel like having the game in Ames is really their only advantage. they're pretty much Iowa State that we're used to. They, you know, they got 31 points on Tech, but their defense isn't that good. I didn't even really pay attention to that game. They beat Kansas, but who won't? So, I mean, I hate to just generalize it because I did that last week just saying, oh, it's not going to happen. They're not going to win. No way. And, well, they nearly did. So, but it's – I'm not concerned. We all know what Iowa State is.
Yeah, hopefully we can avoid what happened to Oklahoma State years ago when they were just, you know, one game away from the national championship and went out there and were not able to finish it. I think we're going to be fine. Hopefully all those things that you guys said will come true, that we will be able to win big, get our starters some rest, go into that bye week with momentum being 7-0, and come home with no injuries. If we can do that, we are going to be in a good position for this home stretch, which has got West Virginia and Oklahoma State and Oklahoma and Baylor. Those four that we're closing with, I guess I should count Kansas, that's as good of a run as anybody is dealing with. And so I don't want to hear any poor mouthing of our strength of schedule with those games that we've got coming our way. I did want to highlight one more stat that was tweeted out by our own Trey Fallon, that we had the DFW numbers that came out. And I'm not going to admit that I know exactly what these numbers mean, but I know that they're good. The TCU-Kansas State game on Fox drew a 7.1 in terms of DFW viewership, second only, of course, to the Red River Shootout, which is totally understandable. The Baylor-Kansas game on Fox Sports 1 drew a 0.7. So for those of you that aren't math majors, 7.1 is bigger than 0.7. But also of note, in DFW, the Texas Tech-Iowa State game, which was on Fox Sports Southwest, also drew a larger number. Barely, but drew a larger number than Baylor and Kansas. And so, you know, not only do we have more exciting brand of football, not only are our games a blast to watch, nobody watches Baylor. So I just wanted to go ahead and remind everybody that there's a reason that Baylor is in Waco, and that's because nobody wants to watch
it. Yeah, I was going to chime in and say that once again proves my theory that nobody cares about Baylor.
That's right. Nobody cares about Baylor. I didn't get to see any videos tweeted out from the dorms about those dorks being excited or being disappointed that we won. I was hoping that was going to be a weekly write, but it looks like that's not happening. Yeah. Well, guys, we're about to wrap up this show. Hopefully next week we will be coming on and talking about a big win that we had against Iowa State, figuratively and literally, because that's going to drive us to some much-needed rest and for a Thursday night showdown against West Virginia at Amon Carter. So I want to thank everybody for listening to our show. I hope you enjoy it. Tell a friend about it. Go on iTunes and rate us and tell everybody about how enjoyable it is to go to work listening to the Frogcast. So for Daniel Southern, for Trey Fallon, I'm Jeff Mitchell, and this is the Frogcast.